But I want you to have a pad of paper and a pen handy, as always, because you never know when something's going to strike your fancy, and being prepared will enable you to write down the information. We have a fabulous guest this morning who is located, I believe, in Corvallis, Oregon. Murray Oxman is our guest today. How to read people like a book and how to easily handle difficult people. Both of these books are handbooks. They are a must-have for anyone's library. Haven't you experienced those people that when you're around them, you just want to wring their neck and you go, I'm tongue-tied, I just don't know what to do? Well, we're going to find out from Murray how you can handle the situations competently, comfortably, and maybe even have a sense of humor in the process. Murray Oxman, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Donna.
And how is it in gloriously beautiful Oregon?
Yes. Beautiful, sunshiny Oregon today.
Absolutely. And when we get it in the Northwest, boy, do we savor it and just do everything we can to hang on to it for as long as we possibly can.
Right.
Murray, you've got an interesting background, and I'm just going to share some details with my audience. You're a best-selling author. You've been involved in seminars over the years. You're also a psychological researcher. You've done a lot of radio and television programming, and you've been in newspaper articles throughout the country. You're published in the prestigious American Journal of Psychology, and you have really enjoyed your interaction with the many thousands of people that have been in your classes and seminars for over 20 years. Now, what I find so interesting is these books. The one I've got, both of them in front of me, How to Read People Like a Book, 50 Uncommon Tips You Need to Know, and also How to Easily Handle Difficult People, a handbook on this, Everything Problem People Don't Want You to Know. And they're both delightful books, but I want to go to the first one before we get to the difficult people.
Okay.
How to Read People Like a Book. When you put this material together, I know you say it comes from a culmination of experience. Did you find that there were particular situations you found yourself in that were wonderful teachers? And if so, give us an example of some of them.
Donna, let me say this to you, that unequivocally, that I learned the most in situations that always humiliated me. Those are the ones that I got the most out of. When I felt like that I was the victor, they never taught me anything. In fact, they taught me the wrong things. It was always humiliation that taught me.
Give us an example.
Well, so many times in my life, I was so sure that I was doing the right thing. And so when you're sure you're doing the right thing, you're not really watching yourself and watching the other person to see how they're reacting to you. You're just full of confidence, and you really think you know what you're doing. But one day, I decided that I was going to adhere to that old adage, which was, know thyself. And I wanted to find out if I really knew myself, because I like most people, I really thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I started watching myself in action, and I started watching other people. And what a humiliating experience that was, because I didn't know myself at all. And I didn't know how people were reacting to me.
How did you find out?
Just by observation, by watching myself, as I said, in action, but not judging myself. At first, what I wanted to do was to judge myself and then fix it real quick. And I discovered that was my self-love that was doing that. And what I really needed to do was just to watch and see what would happen if I didn't do anything about when I saw something in myself that wasn't, as they say, too delicious, that if I didn't try to fix it myself, I just watched it. Without judging it, without judging myself and saying, oh, that was a good thing I did, or that was a bad thing I did, or I was terrible, or whatever it was. I just watched, and the watching cleared everything up.
Now, you have in this one book, How to Read People Like a Book,
Yes. You
have the terms honesty, flattery, standard, eyes, birds of a feather, and with each one of these, there is a paragraph, or sometimes more than a paragraph, of wisdom. And just in relationship to what you were just discussing, you have one which is on page 13, please yourself. Trying to please others will get you nothing but anxiety, nervousness, and scorn. Please your true self, and you receive the inner riches of a nice, relaxed, confident life.
Right.
Now, I know that we have listeners that are saying, true self.
Right.
What is my true self?
Your true self, sure, that the self that we generally are trying to please is our acquired self, our false personality, our conditioned self, the one that we sort of grew up with thinking that it was really us. And the big breakthrough came with, for me, is when I realized that that wasn't who I was at all, and that who you really are and who I really am were our essence self, our higher self, whatever you want to call it. But I'm not talking about it just in general New Age terms, anything like that. I'm talking about something that's God-given that, when we come to this world, gets covered up very, very quickly because we get swept away in this world.
Oh, I think that that is so true. One of the greatest challenges, I feel, that we have as human beings is discovering our unique individuality. Every one of us has, I believe, a particular blueprint, and life gives us the opportunity to fill in all of what might be a blank space in that blueprint and making it rich and full. But it's tough, because to unlearn what may be certain cultural patternings or indoctrinations, that takes a lot of courage to be able to say, this doesn't fit. It's sort of like wearing a pair of short pants that I had when I'm 8 years old and I'm 45 years old. It doesn't work anymore.
Right. Yes. And that's a good word that you use, which was individuality, our own individuality. Individual means undivided.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we believe that we're undivided or that we're an individual, and we come here and we are divided. And so one of the big meanings in life is to become whole, and when you're whole, then you're one with the universe, and then the universe expresses its particular individuality in a particular place and a time through the body, through your essence, however you want to put it, because nature never duplicates itself. And the universe never duplicates itself. Everything is, in fact, truly different. But we're all one. We're not separate like we feel. We all have this separate self, and we think that's my individuality. And excuse me, I don't mean to any disrespect to anybody, but that's really our junk.
Mm-hmm. It's very tough to be able to be totally comfortable in your own skin, so to speak, and to take joy in your own individuality, and at the same time recognizing that you're this particle in this massive portrait of life, or I should say universal aspect of life. And in one perspective, it makes you feel sort of humble, but in another, it's so liberating. I mean, I think it's just a joy.
I'll tell you, what's really liberating is when you see a bunch of your ideas that you've had and beliefs that you've had and patterns that you've had, when you see for yourself that they're just a bunch of trash that you've been hauling around, and so you just walk over to the trash can and throw them into the trash, that's liberating for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm always doing is I'm trying to discover who I'm not who I am. And I have discovered that when you know who you're not, then you know who you are. But if you try to discover who you are, all you're going to do is just go around in circles and get more mixed up.
Boy, I think a lot of people listening would say, man, I've been there, I've done that, and I wondered if it's even worth the time of trying to explore myself and to investigate. And I always like to encourage people to investigate. Have a curiosity about themselves and their lives. I think so many times we get in little boxes. Now, I'm going to touch on another subject that you have in this little book,
yeah.
How to Read People Like a Book, comfort. And you say, always remember when you're dealing with anyone that if you say or do anything that threatens their sense of comfort, you've got a fight on your hands.
Right.
Don't push people psychologically. They'll resist and push back. Use tact, slow down, take your time, and introduce new ideas to them gradually so they'll feel at ease with you. Wow, that is a mouthful.
Yes, yes. It's a lot easier to say than it is to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I found that the best thing to do is let you know. The best way, if you have something to say to somebody, is to say it by your own actions.
Walk your talk.
Right, that's right, exactly.
And I really feel that that's one of the components that makes good conversation with people, when you can just sit and share, and people can put their ideas out on the table, and you don't make it a black or white, where you say, if you don't agree with me, that's it. I'm not having anything to do with you. There is that open forum. I think that is what makes brainstorming so phenomenal, when people can get together and just throw ideas out and say, what do you think? Let's just put this out here and see where it goes.
Right. Again, that what you're saying is true, but that's fairly rare. You don't come across that very often. And again, the things that always help me the most is learning things about myself that I didn't want to know. For instance, when I started putting myself into situations, being with people that I didn't want to be with because I felt superior or they just irritated me, that type of thing, I found that if I got into conversations with those people and sort of hung out with them, that taught me a lot more than being around my friends. My friends, unfortunately, would never tell me the truth about myself. The people I didn't like, they'd always tell me the truth about me. But, of course, I'd always say it was the other way. I'd always say that the people that didn't like me, they didn't know what they were talking about, and my friends who lied to me, they always knew me.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you have a subject in here that every human being on this planet can identify with, and that is procrastination.
Yes.
And I like this one statement, and then I want you to tell the story. Never feel sorry for anyone. If there was a magic pill available that would put an end to one's problems, most people would not take it. Tell us the story about procrastination.
Oh, are you talking about the story in the book?
Yes.
Yes. Procrastinators don't like to arrive for anything. Yeah, here it is. Here's a psychological story. I'm just going to read it from the book. Once there was a town, and in that town lived people known as the procrastinators. Naturally, they were known far and wide for all the things procrastinators don't do, like arrive early for anything, have a calm and forthright demeanor, always radiate cheerfulness, rebuke themselves for their bad behavior. And, of course, they felt they didn't get a fair shake in life. Others had advantages they deserved. Interestingly enough, there was a man living in a nearby village that heard the complaints of this sad lot of ne'er-do-wells for so long that he decided to put them to a test and give them a chance to help themselves. Also, he knew there were people who wrongly felt sorry for the procrastinators. Their living conditions were terrible, all because of them being the way they were. The man was very wealthy, and he felt compassion for his fellow man, so he decided to put his plan into action. Soon, the word spread amongst the procrastinators. A train was to arrive in town at 3 a.m. on the 5th of March. The train was to take any and all that wanted to leave their dismal home to a new home in a faraway, beautiful, clean village. Each was to be given everything needed to make a new start for themselves once they arrived. The 5th of March came and went. Only one man boarded the train for a new life. He was given a new home, clothes, furniture, and funds to make a fresh start. He lived happily ever after. What happened to the rest of the people? Well, true to form, they procrastinated. And still, true to form, complained that the hour was too early and that they should be given another chance, and all the other things the procrastinators usually say. End of story.
End of story. This book is just delightful. And for those of you who are just tuning into the show, we're talking with Murray Oxman. He's located in Corvallis, Oregon. We are talking about two of his books. The first one, How to Read People Like a Book. And now we're going to get into the one that I just think is so fascinating, How to Easily Handle Difficult People. This is a handbook. Boy, have we encountered a few of those in life. And I'll just speak for me. I can't speak for anybody else. Everything problem people don't want you to know. Why is it the problem people don't want us to know this, Murray?
Without us, who are they going to upset?
Okay. So, hey, we've got a few aces with your book here. But let's just chat about difficult people. I mean, I can think right off the top of my head. I think of someone that I worked with who was a whiner, a complainer. People in the office would want to do things collectively, and this person was always sabotaging everything.
Right.
And what I noticed is that no one ever stood up to this individual. How would you handle somebody like that who is just, yuck, I mean, they have this nice face on the outside, and they're slithering and slashing and digesting and consuming any victim that's available.
Right. The key is to not get negative. Not be negative in any way when you're dealing with a person like that, because if we get negative, then it feeds their negativity, and their negativity is what causes them to be the way they are. And so we don't want to do that. And that the best way to deal with someone like that you need to have a little talk with is to, in a very personal way, because first of all, if you do it in public, then they're going to get humiliated and they're not going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just going to make a bigger trouble. You have to get them off by themselves, and you have to set the mood some way. You have to get them relaxed and so forth. Then in a nice way, you have to encourage them to come out of their shell and join the fun. You have to do it in a nice way.
Now, you have listed 20 personality types for the most difficult people, and I'm going to share this. We have the gloom and doomer. Boy, have I known a few of those.
Right.
The intimidator, the energy thief, Mr. Obnoxious, the criticizer. Whoa, there's just people that pop into my head on this. The judge, the trash man, the persister, the moaner and groaner, the moocher, the demander, touchy-touchy, the know-it-all, Mr. Bossy, Mr. Inward, the blabber, the activist, the excuse machine, the kibitzer, and the most difficult person of all. Let's get into the criticizer. This is the person nothing you do is right. There's always something wrong. I mean, if they had the most perfect hot fudge sundae in the world and a cherry was put on top of it, they'd complain about the angle that the stem was going.
Right.
What do you do with this person?
Well, I'll tell you, I learned this one the hard way, and that everything that I ever tried didn't work. And so one day I decided to see what would happen if I just said something like, you know, you may be right, I'll think it over and get back to you on it. And lo and behold, from that point on, the person didn't give me much trouble.
Why do you think that was the case?
Because the person liked to argue. The person liked it if they criticized me and then I got upset with it or tried to tell them that wasn't correct, that wasn't the way it really was. But that's what the person was itching for, was that kind of exchange. They wanted a little battle. So if you don't give them the battle, they go look someplace else for a battle.
Oh, that's a good thing. I don't know that your people around you would appreciate it very much. They'd say, hey, can't he pick on you for a while? I'm sick of him.
Right.
Or her, whatever it may be. Let's talk about the intimidator.
Incidentally, I want to tell you something. Friend of mine who was just 10 years old at the time heard me say this one time someplace at a talk I was giving, talking about just sometime when somebody is trying to push your buttons, just agree with them. And so he was out playing baseball one day, and there was several older boys, and they were trying to bully him, and so they were calling him names and trying to just instigate a fight. So he said, you know what? What you're saying is probably right about me. And that was the end of it.
And they said, this isn't any fun.
That's right.
You're just not doing what we want you to do.
Right.
Gee whiz. You know what I think is so important about that is if you can really honestly and seriously detach when you're saying that.
Right.
And just look at it and say, you know, you must be really having a rotten day.
That's right. What's that to me?
Yeah. And I think we're taught... I relate to this personally. I think we are taught by people that are around us that you're supposed to be insulted. You're supposed to have this drama about certain things in life.
Right.
And I can remember the anguish and suffering I went through when I was a little girl, because the adults around me would say, well, this is what it is, ta-da, 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 and I was just hurt to the core.
Right.
Just terribly hurt.
Right.
And you carry those scars for a long time until you can perhaps reach a point, if you have someone like you that you can interact with, maybe go to seminars and realize, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm buying into this stuff on a personal basis.
Right.
What do I think of me? How can I handle it? So I just think your book, How to Handle Difficult People, How to Easily Handle Difficult People, is a delight. Now, we have the intimidator, and I have seen some people when they feel like they're not able to control someone, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's male or female. I've seen all kinds of scenarios.
Right.
But their face will get red, and it's like, well, if you don't do it my way, you know, this is it. We call them bullies.
Right.
I think that's a better description, as you've stated it. How do you handle that?
I'll tell you, this is right out of the book. The thing to do with somebody that's being pushy is to disarm them by asking them why they are doing what they're doing. Just simply, why do you want to know that? Or why do you want me to do that? Or why are you treating me this way? Anything like that, when you ask a question starting with why, then it completely disarms them, because then they're going to start defending what it is they're doing. They're going to start explaining it. And so now they're not in control like they were. You have taken control, and they're answering to you.
And I think that is a very, very powerful positioning to be in, when you can turn it around.
Right.
And then you're the one that is holding your ground. I think some diplomats and some politicians need to talk to you, Murray. I think we need some assistance in that area from you.
Could be.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe we all need to get some training and go in mass and say, look, guys, wake up.
I'll tell you something else, though, too.
What's that?
That we get to it later in the book when we talk about the most difficult person of all.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you, I told you about the humiliation and how much it helped me. Is that something that has helped me far more than anything that I can think of, is to let people walk all over me, to let people win.
Mm-hmm.
And what it taught me was is that I should have done it years before, that I waited too long to get to that point, because the fact of the matter is, Donna, is that there is nobody there to be bullied. There's nobody there to be pushed around. It's all an illusion. And if you'll allow it to happen, you'll allow yourself to get beat up enough, you'll finally just give it up. You'll get so hurt that you'll say, this is ridiculous. I'm not going along with being me anymore. That's it. I'm through. And in that is tremendous freedom, because you're free from your wrong ideas about yourself. There is no central self like we think there is. It's an illusion created by our wrong thinking and our imagination.
The most difficult person of all. Who is that person, Murray?
Murray.
For me, it's Murray. And Donna?
And for Donna, it's Donna.
Right. So it's ourselves.
Right.
We're the most difficult person of all in our lives.
Right.
Well, Murray, to take ownership of that statement, that's a great deal of personal responsibility, isn't it?
Yes, but it's the only thing that works, Donna. Nothing else works. I tried it all.
I love your statement in here. There's no right time to suffer psychologically over anything.
Right.
Period.
Right.
End of sentence. End of statement.
Right. So who's doing that? Who's making me suffer? Me.
Mm-hmm.
Who's getting the false thrill out of it? Me.
Mm-hmm.
Who whines about it? Me. Who complains about it? Me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Who wants to be the victim? Me.
To take that personal power of our own individuality, you, like you said earlier, Murray, it is liberating.
Tremendously liberating.
And you make a statement here in your book that you feel that we've become a country of whiners.
Yes.
People who don't want to take responsibility for their own actions and lives.
Right.
And that we are always giving excuses for our bad behavior and shortcomings.
Right. Instead of just fixing it.
What would you, now I know your books are great, and for those of you listening, it's How to Easily Handle Difficult People, The Handbook by Murray Auxman, Everything Problem People Don't Want You to Know, and then also How to Read People Like a Book, 50 Uncommon Tips That You Need to Know. And Murray, with yourself, with your life, you have such a passion for empowering people, making them richer human beings as individuals. Is this something that when you're involved with it, that you are feeling this is, it's just a journey that has all kinds of continuing and adventures to look forward to?
Yes, and that I'm going to tell you, first of all, I don't know if you know this, Donna, but we have classes here in Corvallis. If any of your listeners are interested, come down this way sometime and come to one of our classes.
Mm-hmm.
They're only $3. But the... Here's what's so nice about this, is that you never reach the pinnacle in this. You never reach the pinnacle. There's always more. The universe is constantly cleaning itself up. It's always refining itself. So consequently, to be in harmony with the universe, we must do the same thing. We must be constantly refining our spirit in order to be harmonious with the universe. And there is no end to the journey, and it's always more and more liberating because you get lighter and lighter because you're dropping off junk as you go. There's always more junk to get out.
Sort of like having to constantly clean up the office at home.
Right. That's exactly right.
It's
always nice after you clean up a room and you go into it, you sit down, you just take a deep breath. Because it's so open and airy. It's the same thing in your inner rooms when you clean them up. It's the same way.
But, you know, there's always that paperwork that comes in. There's this stuff in the mail. And I was chatting with someone who was a guest on my show earlier in the week. And we were talking about organizing things. And well, once you have everything in order, that's wonderful. But you can turn around and in a week have something coming right back in that you realize, uh-oh, if I don't put this away or if I don't do something with it, I'm going to end up with another pile of junk.
That's great. That's a beautiful analogy. And that it's the same thing inwardly, but in what we're doing, we like to have the challenges. We like to let the situation, the challenge, teach us. Instead of trying to make the challenge bend to me, I'm going to let the challenge teach me how to see through the challenge so that the challenge is no longer a challenge. So it's taught me how to overcome the challenge.
Well, I think that's fabulous. Murray Auxman, this has been a delight. Now, I do know that people can get in touch with you directly. Do you have, and you have a program, Success Without Stress.
Right.
Whoa. I can see a line standing up for that one. Murray, what is the way that they can contact you?
Just call us on the phone.
Call you on the phone, and your phone number is?
541-752-0870.
That's 541-752-0870. And Murray Auxman is in Corvallis, Oregon. And if you do have a website, Murray?
No, we do not.
You don't have a website. Well, this is a gentleman that really believes in success without stress. His wonderful books, again, are How to Read People Like a Book, How to Easily Handle Difficult People Handbook, Everything Problem People Don't Want You to Know. They are delightful books, and they are books that you could pick up at random, and whenever you're having a bad hair day or a bad people day, for whatever reason, these will inspire you, and they're just so much a wonderful thing just to have handy and a great gift to give to someone, maybe one of those difficult
people. They're available
people.
At bookstores everywhere.
Yes, they are. Murray, we're out of time. Thank you for being my guest. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure, Donna.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, phone lines will be open 877-876-5227. Don't you go away now. More good things to share. Hi, this is Donna Sebo with the Hour of Mind Power. Now, by the way, if you'd like to call in, we have a toll-free number that you can call into. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Call us at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. All I need from you is your first name or initial, and then after that, just sit back, relax, let me share with you what my mind receives in the way of information, and then you'll be able to ask a question about anything you like. I want to tell you about a wonderful event, and I know you're going to be hearing it every day, even through the month of August, and it's about the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is an event I've participated in for a few years now, and it is just a joy and delight. Not only are the people wonderful to participate in it, but it's showtime from the time you walk in at 9 in the morning until 6 when you leave. There's a wonderful cannon that just blasts the sound that lets you know that the fair is opening, and you're there for fun, for games, for entertainment, and to be delighted by beautiful costumes and an environment that takes you into a different time, a different place, a different space. It's just absolutely wonderful. Now, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair is put on in the first 3 weeks of August, and those dates are the 5th, the 6th, the 12th, the 13th, the 19th, and the 20th. For those of you that would want to go, it's at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, and you can go to their website, Washington Ren Fair. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. And you can get discounted rates and faster service at the gate if you buy and print your ticket online. So just remember, go to the WashingtonRenFair.com. They also have an 800 number, 359-5948, and you can just get in touch with them if you need to, but their website is the best place to go. And this is so much fun for the family. I can tell you it's just a delight to see all of the children, all kinds of ages, just having a fabulous time when they see the wonderful world of fantasy and Renaissance that is just right there in front of eyes. And you have the storytellers that are going around, the balladeers. There's music. 8 stages of activity for entertainment is going on throughout the entire day. So again, don't forget the first 3 weekends in August for the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. And look for me, because I will be in a canopy booth that has a bright golden yellow banners with gigantic red lions on them. That's my identification logo for this wonderful event. And just come on by and say hello. I'll be doing many consultations for people while I'm there. And, of course, I'll have all kinds of books available, too, if you would like to take some of those special things home with you. Donna Sebo here at bbsradio.com. Tell your friends, and know that also we have archived programming where you can go in and listen to that archived programming at your leisure. I also want to mention East Hill Radio, who is carrying this broadcast in the mornings. And they're on 1700 AM for those of you who are in the Washington State area. So if you want to give me a call and chat, let me light up your life with a little bit of insight, call me at 877-876-5227. Would you want to have a memory where you remembered everything? I mean, literally, everything? Well, I'll be very honest. I don't think I'd want to have it. But there is a woman who is known as AJ who never forgets a thing. I mean, absolutely not a thing. She said, I can remember everything that's happened to me, what day it was on, what was happening in the world, who was in my life at the time, and usually what the weather was like. Now, this individual is known to researchers at the University of California in Irvine, California, and they said that it was the first reported case of a person capable of near-perfect feats of recollection without using mnemonic tricks. This person just doesn't do that. It's just part of her brain. Well, there's a person by K. Anders Ericsson, who's a cognitive scientist at Florida State University. He contends that his research shows how ordinary people can easily acquire extraordinary recollection skills. And what this woman did, she kept a 24-year diary and admits that she ruminates over dates and events. And she said, it's like an obsessiveness with me. And Erickson feels that this obsessiveness, this quality, where she will go over things over and over again, may be the key to her ability. He feels that it's possible that anyone who put in a half hour a day thinking about what they were doing would be able to build up a memory comparable to this woman, AJ. Now, James McGaw, who is an Irvine scientist, he has studied this woman as well, but he said, I don't know that it's that simple. He said, I think she's got a superlative memory, and he wants to find out how it works. And he said, she's not a mnemonist. She does it naturally and inadvertently. And I think some of us might use the term a photographic memory, but apparently she goes beyond the photographic memory level. But I have had a friend that is just absolutely incredible because she is almost like this woman, AJ. She remembers everything. And it's been an asset for her, but on the other side of the coin, she said it's really been very uncomfortable because she said there's a lot of things you just don't want to be bothered with. And, you know, most of us will go through life and we remember what we want to remember, something that's particularly significant to us. Why? Because we're so busy just being busy in life, why do we want to carry around all that excess stuff? Makes you wonder. But this individual apparently has been a subject, AJ is a subject of research, and she just does an absolutely fabulous job. So they're going to be researching her for a long, long time. This is Donna Sebo, 877-876-5227, if you'd like to call in and chat with me. I want to share a thought with you by C.S. Lewis. You're never too old to set another goal or to dream a new dream. And C.S. Lewis gave us so many wonderful, wonderful stories. And I think that when you are imaginative, the way C.S. Lewis was, and you put yourself into those creative modes where you step outside the box, you don't stay within the confinement of established priorities, you will say, I'm going to stretch myself, I'm going to grow, I have a chance to do something differently. It is a good thing to do. And you know, there's so many simple steps that you can do to utilize that aspect of life. Maybe cook an entirely unique dish that you've never tried before. Maybe walk a different direction, or decide you're going to study how to do murder mysteries. However you do, whatever it is that might be of interest to you. Have you ever noticed children, how they will so frequently find things so very, very interesting that we wouldn't give any attention to? Let me tell you about a friend of mine who decided she was going to explore something that was rather unique, and it was an opportunity when she was on the island of Kauai, and she decided she was going to do some snorkeling. She'd never done it before. She took some classes, and she went along with a diving partner. They went in the water, and to their amazement, they found that there was a fish that they had discovered, and they had never seen anything like it. And her partner happened to have a camera that you could take underwater. And they took a picture of this fish underwater. And then they decided, well, we're curious. We're going to find out about this. And they went to a particular specialist on the island. And they found they'd ask questions. Who do you know that really has an understanding of the fish around the island of Kauai? And so they told him, and they made a special trip. They were curious. Well, guess what? They discovered a species of fish that, according to this specialist, was supposed to be in another part of the world. Boy, did that make their trip exciting. Now, what if they had taken the positioning of attitude saying, yeah, it's just another fish. Why is it that this would be important? But it was their curiosity. She said it was such an exciting moment. We had discovered something that the scientists hadn't had a clue about. That is often how discoveries can be made, because someone somewhere is doing something that is different. They're curious, and they're wanting to explore. They're asking questions. And if you can take a positioning like my friend did, you're going to learn something new. If every day you can look at your opportunity to live in the moment, to live right now, and say, I wonder what I can find, what I can see, what I can explore. I wonder what I can learn that's going to be new. You might be surprised at how life suddenly will pop up with all kinds of good things to share with you. But it takes a willingness to explore. By the way, have that pad of paper and pen handy, because I've got a spinach, mango, and almond salad that I think you will really enjoy. Temps are going up, so we want something that's cool, refreshing, and it's going to be absolutely scrumptious that we can enjoy and know it's good for us, but also is going to satisfy those taste buds of ours. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment, so quickly, before we do, I want to let you know we've got a great lineup next week. We're going to be talking with Alan Mesher. Just who do you think you are? Well, he's going to tell us. And we're going to find out also about The Power to Win by Laura King. Then we're going to talk about organic ink. We're going to really get into organic foods and the industry and the changes they've gone through. Judy Thomas will be sharing with us insights into Wisdom's Game. And then Sam Lana, who's America's drumchiatrist. He's 87 years young, and we're going to be talking about how we can keep swinging. And then, of course, we'll get into some homeopathy as well. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Phone lines are open, 877-876-5227. Give me a buzz. I'd be delighted to give you some insight today. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back. Don't you go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we've got a wonderful salad recipe to share with you. And remember, you can always call me at 877-876-5227. Now, I do want to remind you my email newsletter is going to be coming out within, about a week or so. So just be prepared. We're going to have some good things to share in that newsletter with you as well. So if you'd like to subscribe, then just send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. And I want to repeat again, don't forget the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, the first three weekends in the month of August at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, Washington. And go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. It's really exciting when you see these magnificent horses that are going to be engaged down the list, carrying armored knights jousting for their king, their queen, their country, or maybe there will be the hand of a fair maiden that one of the knights wishes to win. Well, all of this romantic environment is right there, and you have all kinds of activity going on in the 16th century village. You will want to be a part of this Renaissance Fair magic. It's absolutely awesome. Three weekends of great family fun. You will hear all kinds of performances, storytelling. Eight stages are going throughout the entire day from 9 in the morning until 6 in the evening, each of these weekends. So if you want to get a discounted rate, you want to get faster service at the gate, get in right away. You can buy and print your ticket online. Go to WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com, and join the celebration of magic that you will be able to share with your friends and family. And by the way, look for my booth that will have the bright golden yellow banners with the giant red lions on it. They're just vibrant and beautiful. And you'll find me in there, right in Renaissance costume, enjoying the environment. And I'll be delighted to meet with you and look forward to seeing you there. Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227. Okay, the spinach, mango, and almond salad. You are going to find mangoes are a little bit tough to cut, but if you just make sure that they're ripe and then you cut around the edge, much like you would an avocado, and get around that pit, you will find if you peel the skin off of that mango after you've cut around it, and it'll peel off, then you can slice the fruit and separate it from the big seed that is in the inside. Now, this is what you're going to need: a half a cup of sliced natural almonds, a half a cup of sliced natural almonds, one package, a 6-ounce package of baby spinach. That's going to make into about 6 cups of spinach. It's one package of baby spinach, 6 cups, 6 ounce worth. 2 cups of radicchio leaves. You want to tear those up in nice little pieces. You want to have a mango that's peeled, pitted, and sliced. You want a half a cup of thinly sliced scallions, about 2 will do nicely, a half a cup of thinly sliced scallions, And then you're going to need 1/3 cup of bottled red wine vinaigrette salad dressing, 1/3 cup of bottled red wine vinaigrette salad dressing, and then 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh cilantro, 2 tablespoons of cilantro, 1 tablespoon of grated lime zest. Fresh is best in this case, not dried, fresh. 1 tablespoon of that, and 1/4 teaspoon of cracked pepper. Now, this is what you do. You want to brown your almonds a little bit, just till they're lightly brown, in a hot, dry skillet. And it takes about 2 or 3 minutes. And then you just remove them and put them to the side. And in a big serving bowl, you want to take and toss your baby spinach with your radicchio, your mango, your scallions, and your almonds. And then in a little bowl, you just want to whisk together your vinaigrette, your cilantro, your lime zest, and pepper. Put it over your salad. Voila. It's all ready for you, deliciously flavorful and perfect for these hot summer days. It's great for lunch or for dinner, and it's perfect for these hot summer days when you just go, oh, I don't want anything heavy. It's just too hot to eat. Well, this is ideal. Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227. I wanted to share with you, I know we're just about out of time here, about a young man, Billy Mills. Now, Billy grew up on a Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, and he's a member of the Oglala Lakota, the Sioux tribe. And he always was encouraged by his father to become an athlete. And he said, athletes are able to have a great deal of pride and self-esteem because of the hard work they put into accomplishing what they do. And this stood Billy in good stead because his dad died when he was about 12 years of age, and he was sent to a boarding school. But his father's words and encouragement really stayed with him, and he ended up joining a track team. He became a long-distance runner. Well, he ran, Billy did, straight into the record books at the 1964 Tokyo Olympic Games. At 26, he became the first American to win a gold medal in the 10,000-meter race, finishing in 28 minutes, 24.4 seconds, which at that time was an Olympics best. And what Billy said is that he saw his Olympic win as a gift. And he said, what do you do with a gift? You share it. What Billy did was very special. He founded Running Strong for American Indian Youth, whose mission is to make a positive impact in the lives of Native Americans and their communities, help them build pride and self-esteem. So not only does he support the cultural and language education, the organization also addresses critical needs on reservations, funding water wells, gardens, medical facilities, and housing. Billy, although he became an Olympic champion, used his gift. He didn't stop after 10,000 meters. It was just the beginning. And you can learn more about what he's accomplished by going to their website, IndianYouth.org, IndianYouth.org. And Adam Hunter is the gentleman that put that information together. Great story. Well, I know we're almost out of time, but when I think of Billy, when I think of our guest today, Murray Oxman, I think of the wonderful, wonderful points that each of these individuals bring to the table of life. And you know, there's so much that we all can bring to the table of life. But as Murray said, individuality is something that you cultivate, and it is part of that cultivation that's the journey of life. The self-discovery of who you really are. Take joy in that. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're the boss. You're the one that makes the decisions. You're the one that can take charge and make a difference in your world, and that will automatically ripple out to everything and everyone around you. Make it a good one. This is Donna Sebo. We will be back on Monday, and we'll find out just who do you think you are. Have a fabulous weekend. Wonderful day. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.